content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Higher, baby, you're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio, and we are going to elevate your mind today for sure. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, and Vaughn Eaglin. Hey, Vaughn.
Hey, what's going on?
Vaughn's over there devouring my eggplant parmesan that I brought in this morning.
It's delicious.
Is it good?
It's delicious.
It's nutritious, too,
because
it's made with eggplant and avocado oil. And very little dairy, and of course everything's organic, and
I got chills over here just eating it right
really?
Now.
Really?
So, yes. So.
Well, you know, a man loves his food.
You're
doesn't,
right.
Doesn't he?
You know, I grew up as a fat kid. You know,
and you were a chubby child.
Chubby child. So, man. If you call man boo chubby, I guess. So, I mean, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're not now.
I love.
So, just not? For the listeners out there, ladies, he's far from chubby.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I try to hit the gym every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, this food is delicious. I do appreciate you sharing, and I want to pay you for the rest of the whole plate, actually. So.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'm serious. I'm so serious. I want to take this home. So,
yeah. That's a great compliment.
Hey, you know.
I want to open a restaurant again, but I just, you know, I do. I see that at the end of my life, though. That's how I'm going to end my life, is running an Italian restaurant.
Really, really. I bet you'd be
good. I could totally see that.
Yeah, that's what I want to do because I love people. I love cooking. I love serving. I get real lonely, you know, and I just,
okay.
I mean.
No, it's a way to, food connects everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
And so.
Well, and I could see myself back in my kitchen, my commercial kitchen, preparing all kinds of wonderful dishes. And yeah. I've actually got the logo and everything and
really?
The domain name, but I just, Fiaschetti Spaghetti, which was the name of my parents' first restaurant.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's awesome.
Well, it was actually their only restaurant. I've actually got a cool picture of them. They got married in the restaurant.
That's so cool.
And, Fiaschetti Spaghetti,
okay.
Which is my last name.
All right then. I like how it rhymes. And rolls off the tongue really easily.
Yeah, but I love to cook. And I cooked last night and I cooked the night before. And you know, it's a great way to connect with your children.
Mm-hmm.
I really encouraged my daughter to put her phone down and come out of her den, which would be her bedroom. You know, she's a teenager.
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah, you know, the last thing she wants to do is hang with me, you know.
Well, you're pretty cool, but you know,
yeah, but
a
I'm
cell
mom.
Phone with a teenager.
Oh, I mean, gosh. Yeah. But I pulled her down in, and we made it together, actually. We went through the whole practice together. I showed her how to sweat the eggplant. You know, you slice it real thin, and then you put salt on both sides and put it in a colander and put a couple of heavy plates on top so you put the weight down so the eggplant sweats because eggplant sometimes can be bitter.
Okay.
And by sweating it, you take the bitterness out of it. Then
you're teaching me right now. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, and then you rinse it in cool water. I use spring water because I don't like to put tap water. That's how clean that dish is.
That's why it's so delicious.
I use spring water to rinse off the eggplant and then, proceeded down the eggplant trail.
What is it stuffed with?
Well, it's got the tomato sauce, of course.
Yeah.
There's nothing stuffed in there. There's just a little bit of provolone cheese, tiny pieces. I'm talking like your typical slice of provolone, like that's about the size of a bowl. You know, I don't know, about maybe 5 inches
mm-hmm.
in diameter. And then I cut that into quarters and we just put that and we layered. It's a 3-layer eggplant parmesan. And just, you know, sauce, eggplant, more sauce, cheese, eggplant, sauce, and then a little bit of cheese. And then some grated parmesan on top.
Going back to something you said a little bit earlier in terms of like cooking with your daughter, something about being able to hand down recipes from generation to generation, like that creates a ritual of like connection for families.
Yep. So. I slept well last night. I know she did. And she said it was kind of like that old shake and bake commercial, like it's shake and bake and I help. she said, that was so good, Mom. Oh my gosh. And she took it for her lunch. And we just had cut green green beans on the side. And so she took a big bowl of it for her lunch. And wow. I said, do you want me to save you some for dinner? Because I'm taking it into the radio show. And she said, no, I'm good, Mom. I've had enough. And so, but yeah, there was something else I was going to tell you, but I don't remember right now.
It's okay.
I don't know.
It's all right. So,
I don't know. Diamond? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut. Diamond, did you have any yet?
No, I'm mad because I want a piece. Ariana said she was going to grab me one thing.
We went live.
We went live. We ran out of time.
I'm sorry about
that. I was jacking around and didn't get in the down. And you know what? We did put in the microwave.
Yeah, I was about to say.
We were like 15, but I timed it like 20 seconds on low power just for just to take the chill off of it. You can do that with Italian food. It's like, oh my gosh, when I was like in my 20s, before I knew better about Pepsi and how bad the high fructose corn syrup and all that was, my favorite Saturday morning breakfast was the cold pizza left over with an ice cold Pepsi first thing in the morning.
Yum.
Right?
That's awesome.
You get the Italian food and then the burn from the soda.
Why is Italian food so good cold?
Because it's greatness. That's why.
Greatness.
You know great food when you can eat it cold and it's still good.
Yeah. So I don't know. I taste a lot of the flavors differently whenever I'm eating it cold or at room temperature.
Yeah.
And sometimes I actually enjoy that. Like I eat cold pizza and I'm just like, man, I didn't taste it like this. And so.
Well, and I didn't use wheat in that. I didn't use, you know, I just used, so you take the eggplant after you're done sweating it and rinsing it and drying it off. And then you dip it in egg. Mm-hmm. And then I dragged it through really fined almond flour. And then I lightly sauteed them in avocado oil.
Wow.
So that's what gave them. But they're nice and tender, aren't they? You can't even tell.
I think you should make a cookbook on
ooh,
it.
Ooh. So.
In my spare time, right?
In your spare time.
With chicken yummalicious.
With chicken yummalicious.
Man, Vaughn, you don't even know.
So I'm missing out over here.
Yeah.
I got FOMO right now. So we did a show on FOMO. I'm fear of missing out.
Well,
so.
You know, I won't even make chicken yummalicious anymore.
Really?
Because I can't handle, I can't like.
Everybody.
Not
like
last
crack.
Night, but the night before, Nia wanted something with chicken in. I said, honey, I can't do it. I'm not handling a dead animal. It messes me up too much. I cannot do it. She's like, oh, that's great, Mom. You know, because,
guilt trip.
You know, and then I tried to find. I have to tell you, though, you know, Sean Wells texted me this morning about fake meat.
Yes.
You know, all the. And so I have to say, you know, fake meat is not healthy. It is a processed food, but it's not about that. You know, for me, when I do like my veggie hot dogs, because I still crave that hot dog taste,
with
you know,
the bun and
with
the
bun and the mustard and the
yep.
horseradish and the dill pickles or the sweet, you know, relish and all that and the fresh chopped onions. I mean, I love a good hot dog, but I won't eat a hot dog. So the veggie dog, even though I know the veggie dog is still not a good option, at least it's not an abused animal.
Yeah.
Because I can't do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But he sent me, it's because I guess it's turning into like a 40, and then somebody else sent me something too. It's a 40 billion, 44, they project by what, 2020, it's going to be a $40 billion business, something like that.
For fake food? Is that what you're talking about?
Or fake meat.
Meat alternatives.
Meat alternatives.
But I don't like the Beyond Meat. I like the Impossible Burger.
Yeah.
I just don't like the flavor of the Beyond Meat. I don't.
Yeah.
I wish they could come up with, I don't know what to do, you know, with this world that we live in.
Yeah.
All I know is I don't like animals being abused and tortured and treated disrespectfully. And that goes for people, too, you know?
Yeah.
We all need to, you know, be considerate.
Mm-hmm. Love on each other.
And love on each other. Yeah, be kind. Life is hard enough. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to Stephanie Land is on the show. She's coming up here in just a minute. She's the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Made, Hard Work, Low Pay, and A Mother's Will to Survive, a memoir of her journey. I finished the book up this morning on my patio. And I ended it in tears. And I can't wait to speak with her because, you know, she didn't get treated so well. She didn't. And she had it tough, man, for a lot of years. And to know now that she's doing well and she's a successful author, I can't think of a more of a feel-good story for anyone out there maybe suffering, who's living in poverty. I've lived in poverty. I used to count my change from waiting tables to pay my rent. I used to eat other people's sandwiches that were left over on their plates rather than throw them into the trash. So I get it.
Yeah,
you know,
I was telling my wife. Actually, I was telling a friend of mine about my wife. Now, whenever because I got paid $121 a month when I was a resident assistant at the University of North Texas.
Wow!
And anytime I got paid, when we go to Burger King, of course we'd be eating meat. I said, "Hey, you know what? I just got paid. You can have cheese on that."
So, ooh, wow!
That was a
fancy.
Big thing.
Oh, man,
yeah, I was living big. So you know,
her story is so beautiful, so poignant, so needed in our society today.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Struggle really makes you know people appreciate the good times.
Those are the fondest memories.
Right.
Those are the most fond memories. They are. I was telling Diamond a story yesterday. It's one of my favorite stories from the struggle, if you will, and. My first husband and I had just come home, and we went to Kroger and we bought a, I told the story on the air before.
Oh, yeah.
We bought a piece of orange roughy. We thought, oh my God, we've got fish. We're eating a piece of fish, you know? And then we got like a Near East box of rice mix. And I think we had some, I don't remember the vegetable. All I remember is we had enough money to buy a bottle of wine.
Oh yeah, you were excited.
Okay.
Yeah,
have you heard the story before?
No, I haven't actually.
Okay. Because I hate repeating my, you know how you'll have like your mother tell you the same story over and over and over. Like,
you always gotta act like it's my first time hearing.
And it was a bottle of Chardonnay. It was like, I think it was $10, and it had, which back then was a pretty good bottle of wine, really. Yeah. I mean, not like we're going back to the 50s or 60s, but you know, we're going back to the late 80s. $10 was a lot more than it is now.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so the bottle of wine started to sweat because it was in the summer and we were in the car. And anyway, I went to get out of the car. And the bag was wet, and you know how it gets real dark brown, and then whatever's in it just falls out.
Oh yeah.
And so the bottle of wine fell to the pavement, and I wanted to die. I started crying. I felt, oh my gosh, I was so looking forward to that glass of wine, you know?
Wow.
And so many people out there can relate to that, though. They don't have an extra $2 for anything. They just don't. But I do think that it builds incredible character and courage when you go through times like that.
Yeah. Learning how to work. And a lot. I was doing another radio show this past
Saturday.
I'm sorry.
Telling me live on the air.
I'm sorry. I got invited. Hey, you know. Anyway,
I'm teasing.
We were talking about kids and how they don't have the resiliency that they, you know, need to have nowadays, and how they're entitled and so on and so forth. But work is something that's very necessary for kids because it helps them really understand how to value things and not be giving be given everything. So
yeah.
So to your point, you know,
builds character.
Yeah, you definitely gotta push responsibility down on people. And when they become responsible, then they don't make choices that they try to abdicate responsibility. Hey, it's someone else's fault that I did this. No, it's your fault. You made that choice. Mm-hmm. You know, not everything's your fault in life, but you do have to take responsibility for it.
Absolutely. Well, and I can't wait to speak with you about passive aggressive people. Von England is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with 2 group practices in the Dallas area. He's working on his PhD research that focuses on couple relationships, dialogue. So looking forward to taking calls, too, today. Burn on with Von. We love getting your calls. So 214-787-1190. That's 214-787-1190. And we are going to be giving away a copy of the book Made. So be sure to call us and stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Did you know, when depressed, sheep hang their heads and avoid company? But if content, they socialize and wag their tails like puppies. Rams lean against stone walls so that other sheep can stand on their backs to reach high grasses. Sheep recognize each other by facial features, and when shown photographs, they can remember at least 50 other sheep and 10 human beings, even if they haven't seen them for 2 years. At Poplar Springs Sanctuary, you'll meet rescued sheep, like Fanny, who was found tied to a mailbox, and Adam, who escaped ritual sacrifice. Visitors' faces echo Anatole France's words, "Until one has loved an animal, a part of one's soul remains unawakened." This is Ingrid Newkirk with Peter, reminding us that it's easy to be kind, perhaps by choosing faux fleece.
I love it. Stephanie, are you there? Can you hear that song that you spoke of in your book?
Yeah, I can. Immediately made me smile.
Good. Well, that was my intent. It's so great to have you on the air with us. Everyone, welcome to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Von Eaglin, and our very special guest today, Stephanie Land. And she is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Made, Hard Work, Low Pay, and a Mother's Will to Survive, a memoir of her journey. 10 years ago, Stephanie escaped an abusive relationship and moved herself and her 9-month-old daughter, Mia, to a homeless shelter. Her story is about making ends meet despite low wages, high cost of housing, and a broken system of government assistance. She remains active in fighting to change stigmas surrounding people in poverty, especially single mothers. And Stephanie is currently working as a freelance and as a writer and as a writing fellow through both the Center for Community Change and EHRP. That's the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. Such a pleasure to have you with us today, Stephanie. It really is.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I just finished your book this morning on my porch.
Oh, you did.
And I've been reading it for weeks because, I always have other books that try to, steal my time as well. But I tell you, I ended it in tears and I was so happy and proud of you after everything that I'd read that you'd gone through and all your hardship and your tears. And as a mother, of course, I can relate to so much of it. And it's so good to have you finally on the air to talk about your book, Made.
Oh, thank you.
Well, can you give our listeners an understanding of how you ended up working as a maid to support your daughter and what it was about this job in particular that worked better than, say, employment at a restaurant as a waitress or something like that?
Well, I think there were a few factors. One was that it was the height of the recession, and so a lot of the Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, quote-unquote professional jobs were already taken by people who had been laid off and had way more education and experience than I had in mm-hmm. that profession. But it was also this this kind of, thing where I had to utilize a child care grant in order to pay for my child care. And a lot of the daycare centers that accepted that grant, they were only open during those professional hours.
Mm-hmm.
And as many people know, like restaurant work is all evenings and weekends,
oh, yeah.
Pretty much on call. And so a lot of the jobs, even coffee shops, didn't want to hire me because as soon as I told them that I had restrictions on the amount of hours that I could work, the interview was pretty much over.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 10 years of experience. I'd never had any problem finding a job ever. And then after, I think it was a full year of sending out resumes, two or three a week, applying for everything. I finally answered an ad to be a house cleaner. Just because it was literally the only thing I could find.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand because I'm a scrapper as well, and I don't think there's anything I haven't done at least once,
yeah.
almost, other than prostitution. That's where I drew the line. But I've done. They're looking at me like I can't believe you said that. But I mean, it's true, and I'm telling you, if I was in the dire straits that you were in, maybe I would have even thought about that. I'm serious because when you're trying to put food on the table and to care for your beloved children that you love so much, you want to protect them. A mother's love is bigger than anything, and you will do anything in order to protect your children.
Yes.
Case in point, the work that you did was so terrible. People were so disrespectful. Some of them, not all of them. There were some really good people that were good to you, that took care of you and helped guide you. But it is brutal. The maid business, and it's funny. And this goes on. People don't think about this when they stay in a hotel. So many people don't leave a tip for the person that cleans the room, or they feel like I'm in a hotel, I'll just leave a big fat mess. They're so disrespectful thinking someone else is going to clean up after them. Do you agree with that?
Oh yeah. I had a tweet go kind of crazy about that. I was leaving a hotel room and I always do I'm sorry, I'm fighting off my daughter's illness. So, I always do a certain amount of things before I check out. And that's I wad up all the sheets, take off the pillowcases, put all the towels into a ball, make sure all the garbage is in the garbage cans,
mm-hmm.
flush and leave a tip. And I usually leave at least $10 per night that I'm there.
Yeah.
And if there's more people with me, then I'll leave more usually. And that's because I can afford it. And so I did this tweet real quick about all of these things that I do, and I had so many people respond to that, and just it kind of blew their minds. I guess part of it was oh my God, you do that too, and then another part was why? Why do you do any of that? And,
oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But I've been staying in a lot of hotels recently, and I actually sat down at the hotel bar one night and ended up sitting next to one of the housekeepers that worked in the building, and mm-hmm. it was like her last night of vacation, and we got to talking, and at first she was like so full of pride about her job, and she was 60 and wow. And had grandkids, and she was so happy that she could provide for her family. But as we got to talking, like, she started crying and talking about like all the disgusting things that she finds, and
oh yeah,
and she's like, well, what kind of human being does that? And you know, I didn't say this, but I was just like, a human being that doesn't see you as a human being,
right? No, it's true.
Doesn't visibly see you in their mind when they're doing that.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I'm like you. I do the same thing, you know. And people think I'm, you know, I've traveled with people recently, and they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. I'm not gonna leave a mess for somebody else. I mean, because I've been that person too. You know, I've cleaned houses, not to the extent that you did, but I did everything I could in order to pay my rent. And so many people that have never been in the service industry who think that other people are just there to wait on them. And they just infuriate me so much so that, like, and I think a lot of men and women should use this as a measuring stick. If you go out to dinner with someone and they are rude to the waiter, that's a red flag. And the relationship. Would you agree? over there, Von England?
Oh, yeah, I certainly will. So one time we were doing dating tips, and it said, if you treat the waiter or the waitress with disdain or contempt, like, that's a really big red flag in a relationship, because
huge.
Chances are, whenever, you know, you get into a relationship, you know, and things get tough, they're probably going to treat you the same way because they see that person in a subservient position.
Right.
And at some point, they can do the same thing to you as well.
Yeah. It's really crazy, some of the things that people do. But, you know, to get focused on your wonderful book, Made, which we're giving a copy away, 214-787-1190 to get a copy of Stephanie's book. I'll tell you, it's very, very good. It'll make you cry at the end. I'm just going to warn you. And I just, you did a really good job. You did. And your belief in the, and your passion from your, when you were a very young woman, and carrying through and just becoming the writer that you wanted to become is such an inspirational story for so many people out there that perhaps are living in poverty or don't think, oh, I can never obtain the goals that I want to. They can. And Stephanie's book will show you how to do that just through her prose and her belief in herself and your perseverance was unbelievable. It really was. Just continuing to pull yourself and little Mia along day to day to accomplish your goals is an amazing story.
Thank you. I really think that there was a lot of privilege wrapped up in that, though. Like, I am white, and I felt I had access to education. I felt like it was obtainable. I always had this notion in my head that my current condition, or, you know, my current, I don't know, living situation and my job and like everything that was going on, I had a nagging sense that wasn't my ultimate end. Mm-hmm. And that things would eventually get better. And I think there was a lot of privilege in that. So, and you know, I always tell people, like, yeah, I went to college and got a degree, but I'm still like $50,000 in debt from that. I appreciate being called an inspiration, and that if I can do it, anybody else can too. But I mm-hmm. always like to point out, like, that there are a lot of other things going on there.
Yeah.
That I did have a lot of privilege in my story.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. And it's such a good book. It really is on so many levels. You know, you talk about the difficulties in obtaining help from the state and federal government. Why is it so tough? Where do you see the big mistakes that we may be making in the state and federal government as far as assisting people that have, you know, have fallen on hard times or are down on their luck?
Oh, I definitely think it's requiring a certain amount of hours of work a week in order to obtain food benefits, especially, or medical benefits, or childcare, or, you know, we're constantly asking poor people to do a lot of invisible work in order to prove that they deserve this benefit. And we're not counting the invisible work that they do. We're not counting taking care of kids or aging relatives or people with disabilities, going to school. We're not taking into account that for a poor person to go to the government office to meet with their caseworker or whatever, like they're usually missing work in order to do that. And so that should be counted as invisible work. Like there's so many situations like that where it's not working for them. It's working against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know what? We're going to go to break. We're going to come back for just a couple minutes. And Stephanie, you're staying with us, correct?
Yeah, that was my plan.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's follow through.
Okay.
All right, everyone. Stay tuned. More coming up with Stephanie Land here in just a minute. She is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Made. We'll be right back. We got heaps and heaps of what we saw. They got this and that with a rattle attack test and one, two.
Did you know, when depressed, sheep hang their heads and avoid company? But if content, they socialize and wag their tails like puppies. Rams lean against stone walls so that other sheep can stand on their backs to reach high grasses. Sheep recognize each other by facial features, and when shown photographs, they can remember at least 50 other sheep and 10 human beings, even if they haven't seen them for 2 years. At Poplar Springs Sanctuary, you'll meet rescued sheep, like Fanny, who was found tied to a mailbox, and Adam, who escaped ritual sacrifice. Visitors' faces echo Anatole France's words, "Until one has loved an animal, a part of one's soul remains unawakened." This is Ingrid Newkirk with Peter, reminding us that it's easy to be kind, perhaps by choosing faux fleece.
You're funny, Diamond. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Savannah Eaglin, and our special guest today, Stephanie Land. She is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Made, which is about hard work, low pay, and a mother's will to survive, a memoir of her journey. 10 years ago, Stephanie escaped an abusive relationship and moved herself and her 9-month-old daughter into a homeless shelter. Her story is about making ends meet despite low wages, high cost of housing, and a broken system of government assistance. She remains active in fighting to change stigmas surrounding people in poverty, especially single moms. Stephanie currently works as a freelancer and as a writing fellow through both the Center for Community Change and the EHRP, that's the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. And it's so good to have her on the line with us today, continuing to tell her our story. And so I want to shout out to Renee. Thank you for calling us and winning Stephanie's book, Made. And thank you so much for listening. We always love hearing from our listeners. So thank you, Renee, in Fort Worth. Okay, so Stephanie, you know, let's start with this. So you talk about the difficulties in obtaining help from the state and federal government. We talked about that and how tough it is. But what are some of the key struggles that people face who are trying to get ahead while working a low-income job?
Boy, there are so many.
I know.
I really think it's that the wages just aren't a living wage. They're often nowhere near it. I think I heard a statistic recently that a single parent would have to work 140 hours a week at a minimum wage job just to make ends meet.
Wow.
And whenever I post stuff about this on Twitter, especially, I get a lot of people telling me that minimum wage jobs aren't meant to support families. They're meant to be the jobs that high schoolers take and all of this. And that argument doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it not only should minimum wage be a living wage, but we shouldn't expect, like you were saying earlier, like when you're a parent, especially a single parent, you do whatever you can
mm-hmm.
to put food on the table and to pay rent. And that often means taking a job that is, you know, well below your experience level, or a job that, yeah, should probably go to a high schooler. But when you look at those jobs, most of those jobs are being worked, by adults and, and people with families.
Yeah. It's really sad. I think that minimum wage is okay if you're in high school, but after that, there needs to be a different standard. That's what I think from years of being an employer. I just don't think it's right to try to expect someone to try to survive on minimum wage. And you know, Stephanie, early on when I first moved to Dallas, I worked three jobs. I mean, I slept 5 hours, if that, in order to just pay my rent, you know, and I wouldn't have made it had I had a small child and ended up pregnant, which can happen to anyone, by the way. It can happen to anyone. And so no one needs to be judging one another in this world that we live in. We all need to be kind. And like I said earlier, too, help each other out and be understanding about people that are suffering. So, OK, I'm jumping off the soapbox and I'm going to get back to you, Stephanie, but I feel very passionate about it. You know, I have people. I have a nephew in Houston who struggles to pay his rent. And if it wasn't for a recent grant that he got for child care, he's got three sons. And actually, he's got four. One is from the mother of the mother of his children. She was pregnant when he first met her. Anyway, long story short, she got into drugs and she is no longer helping him raise the children. He's a single mom with four boys, if you can imagine. And he has a very good job. He makes $70,000 a year as a manager for Barnes & Noble, I believe, and really good health insurance. But even he struggles because raising children is so expensive, especially if you don't have help with the child care. Right?
Oh, yeah. Child care, that's where pretty much all of my money goes right now.
Yeah.
It's extremely expensive. And I try and make sure my babysitter is getting $15 an hour. And I can thankfully afford that now, but it adds up really quickly. And especially when I'm traveling all the time for work, like that, it's very expensive. And I would normally not be able to afford that. But it was just a couple of years ago, maybe, that I was able to afford daycare. When I applied for child care assistance, they came back and said that I made $100 too much a month in order to qualify.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was working full-time, like very full-time at home as a freelancer. And I did most of my work from like midnight to 3 a.m. And the lady said, I remember this so clearly. She said, well, it looks like you work mostly in the middle of the night, so you don't really even need daycare.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's not ideal.
Yeah, that's not ideal when raising children. Absolutely. Yeah. And, well, you know, speaking of little Mia, I just, throughout the book, I just fell in love with your little daughter. I did, and all her little struggles and how she persevered as well. And, you know, like I said, throughout May, you know, your love for your young daughter really shines through. And so what was it that helped you get through the incredibly tough times? What key pieces of advice can you give to other folks who are out there struggling to build a better life for themselves and their families?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing that got me through, I think, was just the feeling that I didn't have a choice in the matter. Like, I had this little human to take care of and who looked at me as a stable person in her life, because everything else in her life was kind of chaotic. And so I felt a very huge personal responsibility to provide for her and be there for her. But I have been telling people, I wish I would have told people how much I was struggling more. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I had someone read the book who still lives in Port Townsend and knew me at the time that I lived there in the homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. And they said, gosh, if I would have known how much you were struggling, like, I would have said yes when you asked me to babysit Mia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's just kind of stuck in my mind. Like, we're told so much to present our best selves, especially on social media, mm-hmm. And just kind of portray this like best life that we're living. And, you know, struggle is shame. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of shame wrapped up in admitting that we're really going through a hard time. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people, like, when I finally started reaching out for help, like, that was such a big deal. Like, to get a $50 gift card to Walmart mm-hmm. in the mail from some like anonymous person, just those little tiny things like were enormous to us. And it wouldn't have happened if I wouldn't have like posted on social media that I was having a hard time or just like told somebody about it. And so I would just say, you know, reach out and, I think, you know, helping our neighbors, especially at community levels, and is so important. And I think it's where we really need to start if we want to see some change happen in this country.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I've loved having you on the air. I loved your book, Made. If you want an inspirational story, everyone, or just a, you know, a deeper understanding of poverty in this country and hardship and what it takes to get out of it, I highly recommend this book. It's just a good read. And I love having you on the show, Stephanie. Thank you so much for jumping on the air with us today.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I'm sending you a big hug through the through the radio waves. Okay, girl.
Thank you.
You hang in there.
Thank you.
Thank you so
thank
much
you.
For writing the book. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye. Everyone, stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Did you know, when depressed, sheep hang their heads and avoid company? But if content, they socialize and wag their tails like puppies. Rams lean against stone walls so that other sheep can stand on their backs to reach high grasses. Sheep recognize each other by facial features, and when shown photographs, they can remember at least 50 other sheep and 10 human beings, even if they haven't seen them for 2 years. At Poplar Springs Sanctuary, you'll meet rescued sheep, like Fanny, who was found tied to a mailbox, and Adam, who escaped ritual sacrifice. Visitors' faces echo Anatole France's words, "Until one has loved an animal, a part of one's soul remains unawakened." This is Ingrid Newkirk with Peter, reminding us that it's easy to be kind, perhaps by choosing faux fleece.
I love this song. I love Mick Jagger's voice in this song. What's the name of this song? I can't remember the name.
Old Habits Die Hard.
I shook myself free. You see, I bounce back quicker than most.
Oh my gosh. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, and Vaughn Eaglin. I want to let everyone know that you can go to our website, oneliferadio.com, to download and listen to our podcast or subscribe to our newsletter. You can also go to iHeartMedia.com to listen live or download the free iHeartRadio app and listen to us from anywhere in the world. A big shout out to our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior. Sun Warrior is a premium, all-natural, raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to their website, sunwarrior.com, and use the code, the new code, OLR for 20% off your order. And of course, Crazy Waters, all natural mineral water, has been making people feel good inside and out since 1881. And the Honest Hemp Company, their products are natural alternative for managing your stress, reducing mild anxiety, and relieving pain from exercise-induced inflammation. Visit them at honesthemp.com and use the code OLR for 20% off your first order. And of course, the Well-Being Journal, it's now both, it's available in both print and digital version. Order online at wellbeingjournal.com. KetoMed, it's one of the first over-the-counter clinical ketogenic and antifungal meal replacement. Find them at ketomed.com and use the code OLR40 for $40 off your first order. And of course, Nature's Plate offers handcrafted, 100% vegan, always non-GMO, ready-to-go meals to help lighten your cooking and save you from the dreaded grocery store. But I haven't been dreading the grocery store lately. I cooked the last two nights. You guys all know that. But go ahead and visit them at naturesplate.com. When I don't feel like cooking, that's my first stop. So, and it's all vegan, like I said. And of course, Thorne Research, you have higher standards, and so do we. Shop our Thorne dispensary on our website at oneliferadio.com for 20% off and free shipping on every order. Everything you need for everything you are. Okay,
yeah.
Vaughn Eaglin. Hey, so good to get to you and not be passive aggressive. I'm joking because that's what we're talking about today. Passive aggressive people. Von Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue, and you can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com. That's PrestonPlaceCounseling.com, or follow him on Instagram at Von Talks.
With an S. You got it, Von. I like to talk.
So. You do like to talk, and you're very good at it, and you're a very good counselor.
I appreciate that.
Soon to be doctor here in the next upcoming year.
Yeah. End of the year.
Yeah. We're going to have a party for sure.
Big time party. I'll take it.
So. Yeah. Dr. Von.
Yeah. Dr. Von on the line. So if you do feel inclined to call Von, you can call him at 214-787-1190. That's 214-787-1190. And we're going to burn on with Von. Okay. So passive aggressive people. Mm-hmm. Tell us what passive aggressive really means. Like some good examples.
Really passive aggressive. Of people, really, it's aggression. However, it's indirect aggression because people who are passive aggressive typically lack good communication skills. So they're not going to be, you know, assertive. So a lot of times when I have a client that comes in my door, if they tend to be passive, I'll see some passive aggressiveness comes out that will come out. And sometimes they'll swing to all the way being aggressive, but I don't need you being passive. I don't need you being aggressive. I actually need you in the middle being assertive. And so people who are passive aggressive, a lot of times they really do struggle to express their emotions. They may not have the language to really articulate how they're really feeling. So you'll see it come out indirectly. It'll just kind of manifest in another different way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, perfect sense. So there are a lot of ways that people can be passive aggressive. Some of the things that you'll see is, let's say if I have a boss and they ask me to do a project, and then I say, okay, I'll do it, but then I never get to it, so I'm stalling. That's a way that you can be passive aggressive. Another way is deception. Another way is actually gossiping about somebody, because if I can defame your character behind your back, a lot of times I'm getting back at you. So people who are passive aggressive, a lot of times they're looking to get revenge, but they're not doing it directly towards somebody. Mm. And so, it comes out in a lot of different ways. So.
Are all of us a little bit passive aggressive at times?
At times.
When we get fearful about maybe expressing ourselves?
I tend to believe that most people display some form of passive aggressiveness. The issue comes in is whenever they don't actually ever address the issue. And so because people who are passive aggressive, they address the issue or they try to get back at the other person because they feel wrong. They feel like something has happened to them that has been unfair, or they've been mistreated in some way, or things did not go right in their own head. So the thing about fairness is that fairness is a fallacy. So it's an untruth. So the thing about fairness is that I believe you know what I think is fair. And you think I know what you think is fair, but really there's no universal judge in terms of fairness. And so we go around thinking that people should believe or think the way we do, but that's not the case. And so we may feel unfairly treated, but that's not the case. So they have a point. I have a point. And it's about how we process and how we work through the communication with our varying viewpoints. And we have to have safety between us whenever we're talking about this. But people who are passive aggressive, a lot of times they'll do things. They'll disguise their aggression in different ways. So I'll give you an example. Let's say if I'm at a dinner party, I'm with you and you tell a joke and you tell a punchline, you don't get a big reaction. I say, ha ha, you know, you never tell that joke, right? Everybody look over here, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing it, but that's a hostile kind of humor that I'm using. That's passive aggressive. I'm going to kind of poke at you. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm covering up with a smile. I'm disguising my hostility with a smile. So has that ever happened to you before?
No, I tell jokes great. No, I'm kidding. I'm terrible at the delivery of a joke. But I think everybody has experienced this.
Yeah,
of course they have.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think I think people are getting more passive aggressive, actually.
Yeah.
I think social media, I think, has a lot to do with it.
I do, because you don't have to be you don't have to confront someone
You're
directly.
Not face to face.
Exactly. And so I think our society kind of perpetuates this passive aggressiveness because I can say things and, you know, just cover it up with a mask, or you don't know what my real username is. And so society, a lot of times we're socialized into being a little bit passive aggressive. Other types of passive aggressiveness is actual manipulation. And so I give you an example of disguised manipulation. Actually, it's a true story. I did this with my wife one time. So we had this long standing disagreement one time.
What was it?
It was sex. It was sex. It was about sex, you know.
It was about sex. I mean, how interesting.
So we had this long
standing. God, I want to know so bad, but I know you can't tell me. It's okay.
It's all right. So if I had her consent, I would let you know. But however, so what I did was because I know how to sell a story, and I can, okay, sometimes I can be charming, and I'm a counselor, so I know how to, you know, slant things to my, you know, in my
advantage.
Direction. Exactly. Mm. And so I would go around getting people to agree with me who had potentially had influence on her. And so that was my way of being manipulative, but disguising it. And so that really didn't make us, have any more sex, to be honest with you. It actually, you know,
worked against you, didn't it?
Exactly. It caused greater disconnection. But my whole goal was to get people to side against her and with me. And that was a way that I was being passive aggressive towards her. But she recognized it. She's a pretty smart girl. So she was like, I see what you're doing. So so that didn't work very well.
I see what you're doing, and you're not getting laid.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the end of that. So we're good now, though. So we're good. So
what are some tips for people dealing with passive-aggressive behavior?
And so there are really levels to this in terms of passive-aggressiveness. When we're talking about tips specifically, don't overreact, because a lot of times when someone's passive-aggressive, it's saying more about them than it actually is saying about you. And so you have to try to reframe the situation. Sometimes, a lot of times, they're actually dealing with insecurities of their own that they're trying to manage, because if I blow out your candle, then mine shines brighter. Mm. And so a lot of times they're dealing with something, and you have to try to seek understanding and see it from a different perspective so you don't internalize it. Because the main thing is that whenever they do something and it hurts you, you're going to jump to say, I need to do something about this. And so take a step back. Don't, approach them in a non-defensive posture and say, okay, what's really going on here? And try to see what's behind the issue. So see what's not just the content or the actual thing that happened, but what's actually behind the issue. Another thing is that sometimes once you notice them and them being passive aggressive, figure out, you know what, you may have to distance yourself from that person. There's nothing wrong with setting a boundary and then distancing yourself from someone. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, we've talked about this before, people who are passive aggressive, a lot of times they have a pleasing part of their personality, because they can't, because I'm conflict avoidant and I like to please you, and because I want you to be happy, then, and I don't get my needs met, sometimes you'll see that aggression come out on the back end in terms of passive aggressiveness. So it's really important that those people learn how to have good communication skills. So if you're trying to deal with someone like them, it's not your job to change them. Don't get sucked in and going tit for tat with that person, and just realize what's going on. Try to maintain a place of superiority so you don't lose your composure. Use appropriate humor, and you'll be able to deal with that person more effectively if you can actually get them to come out and be assertive with the communication.
Great advice. We ran it right down to the wire, and I love having you in studio, Von Eaglin. You can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com. Everyone, thank you for listening. You know what? You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.